90.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. Stay tuned. That was Ann Feeney, Look to the Left. That's an album way back in the early 90s. Of course, that's We Don't Come to Work Here. We just come to work here. We don't come to die. And welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. This is a show about civil rights on the streets and various other places. It covers a lot of local stuff in Santa Cruz, and you're invited, of course, to call in and to be a part of this conversation. The call-in number is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Area code is 831 if you happen to be picking us up out of the area or you're aware that this is the time slot and just calling in at random because this is such a great show. Again, 831-427-3772. If you want to catch the radio station because you have a program of your own you'd like to propose or you have some information for the station or you're looking for some information or possibly you want to put out a PSA, public service announcement. You have a donation, any kind of radio business. You can call the radio voicemail, the free radio voicemail, 427-4523, 427-4523. And if you want to catch me off the air, if you're interested in civil rights for the houseless, the homeless, the nomadic, folks outside, the number to call is the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. It's a voicemail, but I will get back to you. If you're calling from a payphone and you want to talk to me, it's not going to happen, but perhaps we can arrange a place to meet or time to meet, or perhaps you can say where you hang out downtown, where you're, when you're usually there, and I can try to get in touch with you. 423-HUFF to catch me off air or to, for example, propose stuff for this show. If you've got information for this show that you'd rather not put on the air, but you think is important, then that's the place to go. You can also email the show at rnorse@hotmail.com. Not rnorse2, as I usually give out, but rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, small letters, one word, rnorse, as a Norseman. And I'll pick it up and try to keep abreast of it and read your emails if you can't catch me by phone, assuming they have any redeeming social or political importance, and perhaps even if they don't. So today we have a couple of interesting things coming up. One is an interview with Keith McHenry, who's the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, national organization, which actually is a series of local groups all over the world, not just a national, an international organization, which is concerned with exposing and changing the priorities in society regarding food and bombs, hence the name Food Not Bombs. They feed people and they press for social change, and they encourage people to eat healthy food, often vegan food. They encourage people to support poor people who need to eat such food. Well, we all need to eat such food, no doubt, but those who are have even less access to more expensive food, food of any kind other than food that they can scrounge or beg, borrow, or steal, use Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs is, of course, here in Santa Cruz. It also makes poverty visible through these feedings, which antagonizes the powers that be. And police often are doing a lot of surveilling of Food Not Bombs, so-called health department concerns, which I've never seen documented in any attacks on any Food Not Bombs, frankly, anywhere in the world, that Food Not Bombs has ever actually been approached with a legitimate health department concern. Rather, it is a bureaucratic process by which they try to snarl Food Not Bombs in difficulties so they don't, they feel deterred from going on the streets. But Food Not Bombs serves anyway. In San Francisco, there's an injunction against Food Not Bombs, but they've been serving there for more than a decade, 15 years. It came to San Francisco in 1988 when Keith McHenry came to San Francisco. Anyway, that's going to be at 10 o'clock, Keith McHenry. Right now, however, I'm going to be talking to you about, I'm playing a bit from the last Santa Cruz City Council meeting this last Tuesday around the issue of the Patriot Act and the Bill of Rights, and of course the response of Mayor Scott Kennedy to requests by the Bill of Rights Defense Committee that the city strengthen its protections so that the Patriot Act does not take down law-abiding members of this community because the federal government decides that they are suspicious, should be rounded up, should be surveilled, and so forth. Already, Arcata, almost a year ago, passed an ordinance, thanks to Dave Meserve, Green Party city councilman up there, one of the few real Green Party city councilmen that I'm aware of, unlike Green Party-endorsed Tim Fitzmaurice, who cracked down on the homeless and homeless activists and has done nothing to support Patriot Act protections here, protections from the so-called Patriot Act. They passed a law up there which made it, in fact, illegal for employees of the city to cooperate with the federal government in unconstitutional demands for records, surveillance, arrests, and so forth. And Santa Cruz was looking for the same, and a group formed last summer called the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, which I've talked about on the air. They alienated a number of people by deciding they weren't after the Bill of Rights, they were just after the Patriot Act, and they didn't want to offend the city council, spending an inordinate amount of time fluffing Mayor Kennedy and other council members. Actually, not a very good job, apparently, because Kennedy, you'll hear Kennedy's response when I play the city council tape. Just sort of as a precursor here, however, what is the USA Patriot Act? For those of you who have heard a lot of reference to it but don't exactly know what it is, the USA Patriot Act, of course, is short for Uniting and Strengthening America by Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism. Hence, USA Patriot Act as an acronym. Uniting and Strengthening America, USA, Providing Appropriate Tools Required to Intercept and Obstruct Terrorism, Patriot. This is a law which, according to National Press Club speaker Jennifer Van Bergen in June of 2002, allows the government to enter and search your home without ever informing you, allows the government to tap your phone and computer without probable cause, allows the government to carry out secret searches and wiretaps without showing probable cause, only with a certification that there is a, quote, significant foreign intelligence purpose, creates the crime of domestic terrorism, which criminalizes acts that, quote, appear to be intended to, quote, influence the policy of the government by intimidation or coercion, or to, quote, intimidate or coerce a civilian population. So any peaceful protesters, if you are coercive, you are potentially domestic terrorists. If the government decides you are coercive, perhaps you may have those weapons of mass destruction that Bush has been looking for. That's certainly coercive. That would be basis for defining you as a domestic terrorist, entering and searching your home without informing you, tapping your phone and computer without probable cause. It also expands the power of the government to designate a group a foreign terrorist organization. And any group which endorses so-called terrorist activity, which may be otherwise lawful protest activity, can be designated a terrorist organization. So this lets the government designate such groups as protesters at Vieques, Puerto Rico, or against the World Trade Organization, terrorists. Anyone can be indicted who provides material support or assistance to a terrorist organization, including humanitarian or medical support. So, for example, if you provided humanitarian medical assistance to the Northern Alliance, foes of bin Laden, you could be arrested for supporting terrorism, according to Jennifer von Bergen in this speech of last year, 2 years ago, actually. Finally, another section permits the so-called Patriot Act permits the government to arrest and detain immigrants. This is, of course, a very key section. Indefinitely, for nothing more than a visa violation. Of the 1,200 known immigrant detentions since 9/11, this was a year and a half ago, the ACLU determined only about 5 were detained on terrorism-related charges. But because the Department of Justice refused to release any information, the ACLU obtained this information from foreign embassies, to whom the Department of Justice had courteously supplied the information where it affected one of their citizens. So, that's the Patriot Act. Naturally, local people concerned with civil rights nationally and to some extent locally too started to organize about it. Finally, they got together bunches of signatures. Now we're going to hear some what happened when they finally reached the city council. They were supposed to reach the city council in September of last year. They delayed endlessly on the advice and counsel of their good friend, Mayor, then Vice Mayor Scott Kennedy, the man who originally vetoed the original strong protections against the Patriot Act in November 2002 that were brought forward. He proposed the crippling amendments, or the weakening amendments. And here is a bit of that council meeting. Here we go.
Yeah, my name is John Gibson. I'm here representing this is Deborah. And
John is the chair, perhaps, lead person, main activist, big cheese, major honcho of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, and he's presenting a petition with a woman standing next to him called Deborah. Sorry the sound quality is bad. This is one of my impromptu, crappy tapes, but let's see if we can draw something out of it nonetheless.
Several months ago, then Council Member Kennedy attended a meeting of the Santa Cruz Bill of Rights Defense Committee. He read our petition to the City Council asking you to put the teeth back into your resolution condemning the USA Patriot Act and instruct the police not to cooperate with any government agency in any violation of the city of the U.S. Constitution permitted by the Patriot Act. Then Council Member Kennedy advised the Bill of Rights Defense Committee that a petition of at least 2,000 signatures would command the respect of the City Council, and the matter was indeed placed on the Council agenda. Well over 2,500 signatures, 2,576, a little over actually, were gathered, and upon Council Member Kennedy's advice, there was also a meeting of committee members and the Chief of Police. At the 11th hour, the matter was dropped from the agenda. The committee was informed that a strengthened resolution would violate the City Charter, which charter, we are told, prohibits instruction of city employees by the Council. However, as previous council minutes show, the council does set policy and instructs the city manager to find a way to enforce it. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee provided the city council with language borrowed from Palo Alto, another charter city, which permits the adoption of a stronger resolution without violating the charter. Let it further be noted that former Mayor Riley has stated in the Metro that if the committee brought something that did not violate the city charter, the council would re-agendize our petition. This issue is far too important to ignore. The enforcement of many provisions of the Patriot Act compels the police to violate their oath to defend the Constitution, which is an untenable position for those sworn to protect and serve. Moreover, in an election year that may pose new threats to our constitutional liberties, a more forceful resolution would reiterate this community's solidarity with other cities and states in making a truly strong stand. We are here to place our petition before the City Council and to request that you respect the will of 2,576 signatories and put this matter on the earliest agenda as promised. On behalf of the Santa Cruz Bill of Rights Defense Committee and thousands of very concerned citizens, thank you. And here are the petitions.
Yeah.
My name is Joe Israel. I'm also on the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. I just want to add a few words of encouragement. I think it's commendable that the City Council passed a resolution concerning the Patriot Act a couple of years ago. But the petition that was put in here demonstrates that many believed that it was not enough. As in other cities that responded to the Act, a more powerful appearance in the Bill of Rights is needed. The making of a new resolution, one that doesn't just shake the head and wag the finger in disapproval. Budget woes are worrying governments and individuals everywhere in the country, and it's a problem that demands attention. But meanwhile, the spirit of the nation is being impoverished by fear-mongering and unwarranted acts. We are the people, the very foundation of the Republic. We don't have to fear resisting those acts that would steal the soul of our nation. And that is my encouragement to you.
Yes, Mayor, City Council members, my name is Michael Smith. I too am with the BORDC. I've been before you on that issue. I'm kind of saddened tonight because in the past I've seen people from the public seem to glee in deriding the City Council over issues and so forth. I think the BORDC went out of its way to try to comply with the request by the City Council in this petition, and would hope that you would reconsider. The comments I make now are my own and not those of the BORDC. I'm also surprised that comments, I believe, were uttered by two City Council members that we should just trust the police. Why I'm saddened by this and why I'm very concerned by this is after reading an article by Sherry Carnival in this month's Connection magazine entitled Action Alert, Demand to Know Who Did the Surveillance on the Santa Cruz Peace Vigils. And not only Sherry Carnival, but other people have noted unmarked vehicles taken with people in them, taking pictures of the peace demonstrators, and even the mainstream press has indicated that the FBI had requested this about agencies. So we're encouraging people, the public, to get a hold of Mayor Kennedy, the city police, and Ellen Perry to the Board of Supervisors regarding the Sheriff's Department, although I agree that the Sheriff is an elected position unto itself, to find out and set standards that must be reported back to both the City Council and the Board of Supervisors when the police agencies are approached by the federal government. The other issue I want to bring up very quickly is that we would like to get agendized on the next City Council agenda, the Kevin Cooper case. I'm sure all of you have read about the Kevin Cooper case in the press. Many of you are more familiar with some others, possibly about the evidence that was never heard by the jury and so forth. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has determined that evidence should be retested. However, the State Attorney General is trying to block that and overturn that decision. And we will be coming before the City Council asking you to support a motion to ask the Attorney General not to seek to overturn that. Thank you very much.
Question?
Yes.
Sure. You said you have some
evidence of FBI cooperation along with police and surveillance of the schedule. Is that not your precise?
I'll read just the first paragraph.
Sure, from Larry Collins, RPD.
Recently, the mainstream press revealed that the FBI has been asking local law enforcement agencies to use surveillance.
So not necessarily request for the Santa Cruz.
No, I'm suggesting it's right. Local police agencies.
I might inquire about that. That's why I need to know. I might inquire about that particular thing.
Thank you. Council members, I made the question.
And that was the Santa Cruz City Council presentation by the Bill of Rights Defense Committee to them last Tuesday on please strengthen protections against the Anti-Patriot Act, which I've been languishing for a year and a half, just as Kennedy's U.S. out of Iraq proposal, which subverted a proposal that Ed Porter presented and was going to be passed in early April of last year, has never been presented to the City Council. Kennedy is the archetypal trimmer on this, the man who moved from progressive positions to the right and built up a constituency there, and who actually got his proxies got ousted in 1998 when they backed the beach area expansion. That's Quartararo, Jane Walton, and who was the third person? Oh, yes, Linda Steinau of the downtown businesses. And instead we got Crone, Fitzmaurice, and Sugar, which was a poison treats. But in any case, they won on the issue and Kennedy lost on that. And he's been in that position of moving further and further to the right. Anyway, we're going to hear him in a moment. First, a little Ann Feeney as we set up his response, which is a bit further down the line, and the oral communications, Mayor Kennedy's response.
Oh, they look almost human, but something about them ain't right. They just cross right over a picket line. Pay no attention to a picket sign. They're called scabs. Scabs. The lowest life form spawned in nature's lab. They got no brains. They got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. They might be reptilian. The blood flows like ice in their veins. Or extraterrestrial recyclers that use shit for brains. Now what does it mean to have the right to strike when companies do anything they like using scabs? Scabs. The lowest form of life found in nature's lab. They got no brains. They got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. Now before we had our unions, let me tell you, conditions were bad. Understaffed, overworked, underpaid, till we finally got mad. But then when we walked out to protect our rights, they just gave away our jobs to those parasites, to those scabs. Scabs. The lowest form of life found in nature's lab. They got no brains. They got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. I could puke watching co-workers turned into weasels and traitors. They must be pod people hatched by those corporate raiders and insider traders. You know our labor laws are crazy. They're so damn two-faced. They say I haven't been fired, just permanently replaced by scabs. Scabs. The lowest form of life found in nature's lab. They got no brains. They got no heart. Scabs are tearing our communities apart. Oh, listen to your mama. This is an idle gab. You're pretty damn low on the food chain when you think you gotta grab your striking neighbor's job. I guess you gotta be a scab.
And that was Scabs by Ann Feeney. Coming up now, I was about to speak at City Council and stood in line at the end of the line because there is a policy that we allow others to speak first at City Council. Usually, however, the City Council doesn't stop or otherwise interfere with this, the line of speakers. Here you'll hear Mayor Kennedy interrupting me before I can begin my speech. Looks like, however, we have an incoming phone call. I'll give precedence to that. Hello?
Hi, is George here?
You're on the air, actually.
Oh.
You want to be on the air?
No.
Okay, well, you should probably leave a message on the voicemail line.
Okay, may I have that number? This is the number she gave me.
Oh, sure. 427.
Uh-huh.
4523. Are you calling in to do an interview?
4523. Well, my husband will be doing an interview with George this afternoon.
Oh.
And
okay.
We need to change the landline number that she was given.
Okay, well, listen, if you want to announce what that interview is, you're going out live. If you think that people would need to know what that is, we can
put
it on.
Okay, I'll put my husband on live.
All right.
Just announce what you're doing at 3 o'clock.
Hi, you're on the air on Free Radio. I understand you're going to be speaking on Free Radio later today.
Yes, at 3 o'clock.
And who are you and what are you going to be talking about?
Paul Watson with the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society.
Uh-huh. And what will be your subject, Paul?
Marine wildlife conservation.
Okay. And so you'll be coming on sometime between 3 and 5?
Yes.
Wow. Sounds good. Well, folks may be tuning in for that. And we should do is call the landline if you want to make arrangements on that number. If you got a pencil, I'll give that to you.
Okay.
I should say the voicemail landline. 427.
427.
4523.
Okay.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks.
All righty.
Bye.
A little business on the air, as you can see. We are a very small radio station here. Okay, here is ensuing and more follow-up on the Bill of Rights Defense Committee controversy after 2,500, 2,600 signatures have been presented to the Santa Cruz City Council, asking that the protections against the Patriot Act a la Palo Alto or possibly Arcata be put into force in Santa Cruz, which would make it illegal, perhaps, for members of the Santa Cruz government, those paid by the government, to cooperate with the federal government. I don't have the wording that they are presenting, but I know that nothing is being put on the agenda by Kennedy, and that, of course, was the reason that John Gibson and Joe Israel and others were so publicly outspoken here.
Anybody else who wants to speak with council in oral communications who didn't speak last week? Thank you, sir.
Council members, members of the community. February 17th, permanent parking does go into effect, as the previous speaker was referring to. That means if you're homeless, between the hours of midnight and 6, and you park your vehicle, you're now a criminal, and you're likely to take another vehicle. Extend my thanks, by the way, to City Clerk Leslie Cook for the minutes of this last meeting, in which she refers to the names of the homeless dead that were read 2 weeks ago at this mic here. I think that was acknowledged that. I do, however, also want to note that the Mayor Kennedy again interrupted the speaker at the mic to chastise an individual who criticized him at the back of the room, John Gibson, of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, similar to the way I was chastised and arrested 4 weeks ago in charges that were never brought to court and have in fact been dropped. This kind of intimidation of the public, I think, is inappropriate, ill-advised, and a waste of taxpayer money. I've also, of course, been dragged to the courts on 2 jaywalking tickets, for multiple court appearances and by a city council that claims to be concerned about the budget, as I think they should be. I'm concerned about violations of civil rights locally, and I'm concerned that the community be aware that we aren't just fighting the Patriot Act nationally, and we are, but we're fighting local concerns here around our own police department, whether it's surveilling people or not. And we have a problem with the city council, which apparently feels through its chief executive officer, Mayor Kennedy, that he has the right to define a disruption as a critic speaking silently, quietly to another person in the back, which I regard as essentially chilling of free speech at city council. Another example of the kind of civil rights violation that this council is responsible for is the move-along law, which this council voted for making illegal at a table downtown for more than an hour to register voters, let's say, in your own place, or to boycott a store, let's say. This goes to court on Friday, 10 a.m. People are registered, Department 2. Steve Arkin is still, after a year, being dragged through the courts by this council on taxpayer money. Musicians are still getting tickets because of the so-called unintended consequences of former Mayor Riley and Councilmember Porter's so-called downtown ordinance revisions. Unintended property was the most recent ticket that a musician got. Councilmember Rotkin has yet to come forward on the medical marijuana reforms he publicly promised in November. I've seen nothing from him. This is a town that criminalizes medical marijuana, in fact, even though the state has tried to decriminalize it by making it impossible for clubs to open up. Please act on these issues, and the members of the community, please demand the city council act on these issues.
Your time is up.
Thank you. Thank you.
We're raised because there's a large number of people here tonight, and also people on TV, and questions have been raised. One is, I did speak with the chief of police at some length about the report of surveillance of the peace vigil at Ocean and Broadway. Ocean and Water. And they have reviewed the record. They have no record of Santa Cruz police being involved in such surveillance. There are, of course, other law enforcement agencies in the county for which we're neither responsible nor necessarily know about their activities. So that's not been a concern that's been raised and then ignored by the council. I assume other councils will follow up on that if they want. Secondly, I did send a letter, speaking only as mayor, not on behalf of the full council, faxes to both Governor Schwarzenegger and Attorney General Lockyer opposing the execution of Kevin Cooper, and if the council wants to put it on the agenda, of course they can, but communications were sent by the mayor of the city. And then I want to address the question of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee's request that we place an additional action against the Patriot Act on council agenda, because representations have been made that I made commitments that I failed to follow through on. I told the Bill of Rights Defense Committee that they, I thought, had to do at least three things for the council to take such an action seriously. One was to gather petitions, which, of course, they've done. The second was to get endorsements of other community organizations, which they have done. The third was to find language that was acceptable to the city attorney's office and the chief of police in light of our responsibility to enforce the charter and abide by the charter. As far as I'm aware, that third requirement has not been met. And personally, again, just speaking for myself, not for other council members, I will not put an item on the agenda of the city council that's in contradiction to the city charter. So if that can be cured, let's say, or remedied, I'd be honored to put one on. I will say, however, that City of Santa Cruz was one of the first cities and made a very strong statement of opposition to the Patriot Act, and I sometimes think that time might be better spent working in communities that haven't adopted the statement than trying to get us to repeat ourselves, but people can disagree about that question. Anyway, thanks for your indulgence. I did want to speak to those three items since they were raised, and some might be interested in them. Any other comments? Councilmember Porter.
Yeah, I'd just like to request of, I guess, the city attorney's office, in light of the fact that so many signatures on a petition have been submitted tonight, that we get a very brief opinion about the language at the top of that petition for our next meeting, so that we know whether or not this petition, in fact, is or is not in conflict with the city charter.
We could ask Brooks to opine on that right now on the spot, just to get him.
And there's that collegial laughter and good feeling as the council laughs away the issues, or Kennedy tries to laugh away the issues that have been causing people to meet and organize for over 9 months, and which he has ignored. One wonders why the mayor didn't simply say when he came to the first Bill of Rights Defense Committee meeting, I guess it was in July, that he felt that unless you cleared it with the police chief and the city attorney, he was not going to do anything about it, or he was going to actually bar it from getting on there. Well, I don't know if he barred it. It has to go through the mayor. I'm not aware that anyone else has presented it. I know, for instance, Fitzmaurice reportedly barred Ed Porter's one feeble attempt to put the sleeping ban on the agenda several years ago, and Porter then promptly turned over and went back to sleep. I guess he can sleep, but others, of course, because of his failure to keep his commitments, Porter's commitments to the Green Party, can't. Nonetheless, getting back to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee and Kennedy, and to me this is duplicity on the part of Kennedy. His coming to the Bill of Rights Defense Committee meetings and suggesting he's going to help them, and then not stating the position that he's had for years, that he is, in essence, going to clear everything with the police chief and the city attorney first. He's not going to fight them. I'm not aware of any issues on which he's fought these two officials. He's too close to them to do that. It's like, I don't want to say Siamese twins, but they are pretty close, I've noticed, and I don't see any meaningful criticism or cuts in the police budget over his entire reign on the city council of 12 years. Kennedy is one of these recycled council members who also masquerades as a peace activist. He goes to the Middle East and stomps around down there, and then he makes statements about that are actually scandalous, where factions stand up and say, what is this man, the co-founder of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, doing sponsoring laws that criminalize peaceful begging after dark in Santa Cruz? There's no First Amendment after dark in Santa Cruz if you ask for spare change or food or even silently hold up a sign. That's a $162 fine. Do it twice, $1,000 fine. That's Kennedy's law. Kennedy supported that law. Kennedy's backed that law endlessly. Calls it some sort of reasonable restriction on panhandling. Notice we're not talking about criminalizing people who are angrily and threateningly demanding money. You're talking about any request, even a silent request by a sign. Kennedy voted for that stuff, and he voted for it as recently as a year ago. So the man is duplicitous, I'm afraid, at least as a politician, the public man. I don't know how he is in his private life. And it's not a personal matter, but you have to hold people personally accountable, or else you are led into doing what John Gibson of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee did, which was to, in essence, blacklist the radicals, blacklist and badmouth the radicals in his group, militants, if you will, those who said to him, look, if Kennedy's, I told him this, and actually I told the Bill of Rights Defense Committee this at one of their meetings, what you need to do is go directly to an independent attorney, get some kind of documented statement for the public that this is not a violation of the city charter, and then proceed. That was never done. Now, I suppose some would say this because it's questionable or because it is a violation of the city charter. I know that up in Arcata, I talked to Dave Meserve and had him on the air here on free radio. He was clear it was no violation. They passed the law up there, and he doesn't think the charter up there is much different, or the situation is much different than Santa Cruz. But obviously the thing for the Bill of Rights Defense Committee to have done and to do now, even so much later after they've lost all their people, or many of their people, not all their people certainly, is to go to an attorney and get some legal support here. There are obviously going to be some sympathetic civil rights attorneys that want to see stronger action. The Bill of Rights Defense Committee, there are Bill of Rights Defense Committees all over the country that have helped pass these resolutions in 200-some-odd cities, states, and other jurisdictions. So that's something you obviously can do if you want to challenge the mayor. And as you can hear, John Gibson speaks well when he stands out and challenges the mayor. The trouble is he speaks 9 months too late, and he speaks alone. And that, of course, was the undoing, I think, of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. As for the surveillance by police of peace protests, which Sherry Connable brought up, I have no new evidence on that. I believe, and I'm not sure about this, I'm going to check to see if a Public Records Act request hasn't already been filed and ignored by the police department and the city manager's office on this issue. Kennedy said that he was told there, we have no records, which could mean, of course, that they eliminated the records, could mean they didn't keep any records, could mean he didn't ask the question, did anybody surveil this? Please go investigate. Or maybe he did. Maybe that was the response. Maybe I'm nitpicking. They have no records. I think we need to know very, very carefully what the police department is doing in terms of any kind of collusion with the FBI, and it's likely to be very well hidden and stamped with the local equivalent of top secret, process, litigation, personnel, whatever they can mask or hide it under. It's not likely to get out unless we have a whistleblower in there somewhere. So whistleblowers, come forward. Give a call to 427-3772. I'm a bit late with the Keith McHenry interview, the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, but I'm hoping we can still catch him on the line. So that's coming up next once that call gets put through. Keith McHenry co-founded Food Not Bombs way back in Cambridge, Massachusetts, almost as a fluke. He's explained it to me a number of times when we were working together in San Francisco in the early 90s. They were doing a kind of a protest involving a big dinner outside of some corporate scam, and so many homeless and poor people came to eat that they decided that they would do it again and do it regularly because it was so important. Not just, it was important both to feed the people and to show the community how many people needed feeding. And apparently Cambridge, Massachusetts took very well to it. They haven't had any trouble in Cambridge. But when he came to San Francisco, the so-called then liberal regime, beginning with Dianne Feinstein, who was then mayor in the mid-80s, followed by Art Agnos, big pseudo-liberal, followed by the infamous Frank Jordan, former police chief, followed by whitewash Willie Brown, and now, of course, our latest gruesome Gavin Newsom, the new mayor of San Francisco, all attacked Food Not Bombs with injunctions, with mass arrests, with prosecutions. But Food Not Bombs continues to serve every day in San Francisco and in Santa Cruz as well, two or three times a week. I think they were having trouble with the third time when I last talked to Food Not Bombs workers. If you want to get involved with Food Not Bombs locally, there's a number to call, 425-3345, 425-3345. It's kind of one of those issues. Obviously, it's a dramatic way when you bring food out on the streets and people stand in public spaces in a downtown area in a soup line, in essence. You're showing the community that things aren't well, because people would not normally kind of humiliate themselves in this fashion to stand in line waiting for food when, if they had other resources. I mean, at least most folks wouldn't, I don't think. I suppose there are those who believe it's a statement of principle, and those who are maybe traveling on the road and appreciate the opportunity to get something free and healthy to eat, and some appreciate the message that Food Not Bombs is putting out. But for a lot of people, it's a lifeline. And it's a lifeline in the kind of way that, let's say, the St. Francis Soup Kitchen, which serves a good meal every noon, every weekday, and the Homeless Service Center, which serves a meal at 4, and I guess a kind of a mini breakfast in the morning, or 8 or 9. I'm not quite sure the exact time of the breakfast for the Homeless Service Center. And the Elm Street Mission, which serves a Wednesday breakfast at 7:30 in the morning, aren't. And those are kind of off in little closed, some would say ghettoized or captive kind of situations. Religious venues, of course, require that you either listen to the messages or be, to some extent, a part of what goes on. I understand that they've sort of been liberalized here in Santa Cruz. The Homeless Service Center, it was expressly created to get the homeless people out of the downtown area. And it generates the support of merchants through, in essence, through the message, unless you support this, they'll be back in your, you know, all around the downtown. So this kind of walls them off from the downtown. And, of course, the Homeless Service Center, though, it does provide meals and does provide lockers and is providing, building a family shelter which will house a fraction of the homeless population. There's never been any real interest in providing emergency shelter for people, which is, of course, the key and most basic need that homeless people have in Santa Cruz. Every night there are 1,500 to 2,000 people out there. And tonight, for example, if you add the Armory, which is only open, 4 months, 5 months a year, be open till April, mid-April, that's, I guess, 75 spaces on the floor, plus maybe an extra 25 if it gets tight. And then there's the churches, which provide, what? It's more than 39. I think it's 60-some-odd spaces. There are three churches open. And that's not much. That's less than 200 spaces for 1,500 to 2,000 people out there. And, of course, during the summer, it's less than 40 spaces for the same number of people. And so Food Not Bombs really, what it's doing is, it is, in essence, saying this is wrong and looking for more fundamental change. But at the same time, homeless people are a part of Food Not Bombs. They serve the food. They gather the leftover groceries and victuals from the different places that give away food, in bulk, and they put it into a tasty hot stew. Well, looks like we may have a phone call coming in that deals directly with this issue. Hopefully so. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Keith.
Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs.
Yep.
Hey, Keith.
Oh, how's it going over there?
Pretty good. It looks like you're just waking up on your Arizona Sunday.
Yeah, well, actually, I've been up for, about 5 hours.
You haven't been cooking any soup, I hope.
Not today. That was yesterday.
So what's the story in Arizona? You're in Tucson, right?
Yeah, I'm in Tucson right now.
And Food Not Bombs has a pretty regular presence there?
Yeah, we serve every Saturday at 7 o'clock in front of the Internet Cafe. And the department saying they'd seen us in the newspaper and that we were to cease serving food immediately and that we are no longer allowed to deliver uncooked food to shelters or, any of the other soup kitchens, that you need a health permit to transport uncooked food to other kitchens and so on.
This kind of reminds me of Santa Cruz in 1989 when Sandra Loringer was, as well as Jane Immler and others. You too, I guess, you weren't arrested in Santa Cruz, but you came down to support Santa Cruz from San Francisco. But she was giving out sandwiches and making soup, and Sandra Loringer actually served 3 weeks in jail in Santa Cruz County Jail because she refused probation. She said, "I am beyond rehabilitation," when asked by the judge Robert Attic, or Artichoke Heart Attic, as I called him, if she would take probation, having been convicted by a jury of her peers for violating not a law against healthful, some sort of health violation, but just this, this California CURFL code, if you may remember that.
Yeah, right.
And the CURFL code sort of says you got to have a certified kitchen in California. You can't provide food for the public other than 3 times within 90 days. Do they have a similar kind of code in Arizona? What's the deal?
Yeah, it's the same kind of thing here. Except for you can get a permit to serve 3 times a year in a park, but it's $75 per time that you have to pay.
So this is sort of the homeless dieters approach to things.
Yeah, right.
Eat
yeah.
3 times a year, huh?
Yeah, plus also the other thing is, like, right now there's this horrible, illegal, preemptive war, invasion, occupation, and, massacres by the local government here, the U.S. government, against the people of Iraq, Afghanistan, and elsewhere, where, a lot of people like to maybe speak out against that and do it as effectively as possible. And that's like a lot of what Food Not Bombs is about, is showing that, like, while the poverty is increasing here in the United States, well, there is no guaranteed right to health care in this country, that the funds are being cut for education, and so on, that that we live like in a really barbaric sort of third world kind of state here in the United States, that people should have the right to feed each other, to provide for each other. The government isn't, and they should be able to organize against such a thing, such horrible atrocities, and these kind of attacks by the government. Which are widespread. I know we're getting harassed right now in Santa Barbara. We're being harassed in Norfolk, Virginia, which is where many of the troops are returning to from Iraq. And like I say, we've been recently starting to get harassed in a different way here in Tucson. So I have to say, I just came back from visiting about 40 different Food Not Bombs groups in Europe and the Middle East. And the police had only bothered one group, and that was Utrecht Holland, where they were arrested serving free food in a shopping mall. And then the police apologized. They thought that Food at Home was a commercial operation, and they have been happily serving food without incident now for years since that first arrest. And
well, maybe they just haven't got the police appropriations that are needed to deal with the menace of food not bombs in these different countries.
Yeah, it's really funny. Here in Tucson, the chief of police is making this big pitch that they need 300 more cops. Yet, for instance, very similar to my experience in San Francisco, a couple of days after the letter saying you can't serve free food, I was charged with failure to completely stop at a stop sign that I actually had been stopped at for quite some time, and as part of the normal ongoing harassment of activists that you generally experience. And, I'm currently, of course, here on probation in Tucson for having been convicted of assault and criminal damage for an incident where Marines attacked in protest at the federal building on the first day of the invasion of Iraq. So, it's pretty full court press all the time. But in my 4 months of being overseas, I never talked to a cop once. I didn't. No one would think that serving free food, I gave away food on the streets of many countries. And
you actually went to the Middle East area, Israel, Palestine, Gaza Strip.
Yeah, I was in Israel, Palestine, and I was also in Turkey. I was in Eastern Europe, which was really fascinating. Food on Bombs is very organized there. I was in Belgrade, for instance, and met with Food on Bombs kids there, who described in quite detail what it was like to be bombed by the United States. And really, really, intense. The whole experience of being bombed with cruise missiles is very frightening. And
this was back in the Serbian bombing?
Yeah, this was when former presidential candidate General Clark was, who those people in Belgrade were like, oh, my God, he's running for president? And, rain terror for 71 days on the people of Yugoslavia have now brought Yugoslavia to a state of incredible poverty. That war is, if you live in Yugoslavia, which is now Montenegro and Serbia, you can't leave the country. You can't go anywhere. You can't even go to Croatia. You can get into Romania, which is which is an even more desperate and poor country. The buildings are still total, bombed out all over.
Why can't you leave the country, Keith?
No one will give a Serb a visa.
Is it a racial thing or a class thing?
It's probably a racial and class thing, but no one will give, no countries are giving Serbs visas on any kind of regular basis. Very rarely can that happen. And everyone I talked to was felt like they were locked into Serbia. The Serbian government, the new elections that just happened a few weeks ago, resulted in Serbian Orthodox Church becoming to power, and they're now announcing that they're going to invade Croatia and take back Croatia. So there's a new war brewing in that area.
What is Food Not Bombs in Serbia doing about all this?
Well, they're out on the streets protesting against it, and they're actually quite positive, supported. There's several cities in Serbia have Food Not Bombs chapters. Novi Sad has a chapter, and which is interesting because I had an email conversation through the entire war with a young woman who's yard had been hit by a U.S. bomb.
This is the 1998 war?
No,
2000, it was 1999, I guess.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, 99, yeah. May and June, right.
Yeah, and one of the Food Not Bombs activists there described how she was sitting on the 11th floor of her, apartment building with her mom, and her mom just had a nervous breakdown while they're watching TV as the TV showed the U.S. planes coming over and everything, and then all of a sudden her house, the whole swinging back and forth violently while the bombs were hitting nearby as they race into the basement of the building. And then people are running into the basement covered with blood and everything. She's a medical student, and her focus has been on helping the victims of radio, you know, because of the huge number of birth defects and cancers caused by the use of nuclear weapons against, or nuclear materials.
What has been
uranium against the people of Yugoslavia?
So Futuna Bombs has not suffered any kind of government repression in foreign countries, you're saying?
Well, not as Futuna Bombs. I would say in Israel, they were shot at with live ammunition by the Israeli Defense Forces. That's a certain level of and one of them was actually hit in the leg or one of their...
Well, because they were... Well, they must have been terrorists throwing rocks, perhaps, or...
No, they were cutting a hole in this in the security wall, and so-called security wall, or... So they're trying to open a gate to an olive field, and the Israeli Defense Forces.
It's a dangerous place to serve food in the middle of a place like that.
What? Yeah, well, it's kind of to be expected. I mean, the people are, although it is unusual for a Jewish activist to be actually shot at with live ammunition, the man Gil, who was severely injured, he... had actually just gotten out of Israeli Defense Forces himself. He just finished his tour of duty and was joining with the Futuna Bombs kids in a group called Anarchists Against the Wall, which is about 40, it's almost all the anarchists in Israel, all 40 of them, were involved in this action, of which, about 25, 30 of them were active Futuna Bombs members as well.
But they weren't actually engaging in Futuna Bombs activity. They
no, they were
bringing
just cutting
in
the
soup.
Yeah, they were just cutting the hole through the...
What about Arabic countries? Are there any Futuna Bombs in Egypt or any of these other places?
Not in the Arab countries. In Muslim countries, there are, you know, in Turkey, there's an active Futuna Bombs.
Is that because the Futuna Bombs is repressed in those countries or because no one's interested?
Well, I don't know. There's a couple of things, and it seems like there's nothing that's published in Arabic about Futuna Bombs, and that would be really useful to get an Arabic translation of Futuna Bombs literature. But the other thing is, it's my understanding that, in particular, even in the West Bank in Gaza, there's like very, very active political groups that also serve free food, but they're connected with the mosque. So there's a little less. They didn't really seem to think that it would be that the West Bank and Gaza would be having the Futuna Bombs. They were pretty certain that wouldn't happen. Now there was a Futuna Bombs group that did a youth conference in Amman, Jordan, but I can't find them resurfacing, so I don't know if they still exist or not.
Well, I know there's a lot of criticism of Israeli government policy, and you're pointing out, you know, they're shooting it at Futuna Bombs members, although they weren't acting as Futuna Bombs members, but they were doing something else. But what about, I mean, if Islamic countries other than Turkey don't allow Futuna Bombs to even begin an organization, that should be noted too, right?
Yeah, I don't think that there's any, it's an issue of the government's not allowing it. I just don't think that it's something that people are that conscious of as existing. You know, I think that's more of the issue, is that there is not, like punk movement in Arab countries is not very large. You know?
What is not very large?
The punk rock music?
Punk rock.
Mm-hmm. Movement, you know, is not, like, for instance, we met with punk musicians in Turkey, and they were associated with Futuna Bombs. And it's very, very small. There's only like a few punk bands. And
you know, before we go any further...
It's not like that kind of culture is really happening in those countries, really.
Right, right, yeah. Before we go any further, though, we're talking with Keith McHenry, co-founder of Futuna Bombs from Tucson, Arizona. And Keith, can you, you know, in a kind of a very brief statement, sum up for those who know nothing about Futuna Bombs, and I've already given a description of how it was formed, but what a typical Futuna Bombs meal is like, and what, you know, who's involved in it, how it happens, let's say in Tucson, you know, how much work goes into the preparation of it, and so forth.
Yeah, well, say as an example is Tucson. We pick up food from the food co-op primarily, and we've got a few bakeries, the Daily Planet Bakery and so on. And we pick this food up on Friday nights and Saturday mornings, and then we meet at a house and where we cook. And we're actually cooking now at the Earth First Journal House. And then we take that food, which is all vegan, and we go downtown.
Explain to people what vegan is.
And this would be with no animal products at all, no dairy, no honey, no meat, of course, or any eggs or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And then we take this hot meal. Typically for us, we have like here we're having stews and soups and fruit salad, things like that. And we go with bicycles, in our case here, to downtown to this main street called Congress Street. And we have like a literature table and a table with food and a banner that says Food Not Bombs. So then as people, not only do the people that live on the street come by and eat, but then we just have the people, because it's Saturday and there's a lot of clubs and it's an area where a lot of college students pass by and tourists pass by. So we give out literature and give out food to these people for about maybe an hour and a half, something like that. And that's pretty common. Most parts of the world, that's what Food Not Bombs is doing.
Food Not Bombs has been repressed in numerous cities, but nowhere have you encountered the hostility and level of repression as in one particular city on the West Coast.
Yeah, that would be San Francisco, where there was over 1,000 arrests and many, many beatings of people for serving food.
How many times have you been beaten personally?
And San Francisco, I was beaten 13 times.
And how many times did you go to the hospital?
And I went to the hospital, maybe like 4 times, and I had surgery twice on my face for reconstruct my sinuses.
And you, in fact, eventually left San Francisco kind of somewhat apprehensive that if you stayed, you would get more beatings or things would get worse?
Yeah, I was when the last beating and arrest was when Clinton was speaking at a conference, the mayor's conference on privatization of municipal services. And I was attacked by the police when I was delivering food to the protest, and I was beaten and charged with felony assault of a police officer, of course, and spent a week in jail. And then it seemed pretty clear that the level of violence was going to continue again. I just had finished probation on a 3-strikes case that I'd been facing.
This is when you murdered several people who were trying to seize the soup, or?
Yeah, right. When I was actually attacked by the good people at the mayor's office and in City Hall, and charged with assault, battery, strong-arm robbery, and assault with a deadly weapon.
And cellular phone.
And back that was kind of pre-cellular phone. That was a beeper.
Oh, beeper.
Yeah, back in the good old days of beepers.
Now, are you a violent person yourself, Keith? I mean, are you a kung fu expert and that sort of thing?
No, I'm a lifelong nonviolent activist.
Carry any weapons?
I've never been in any fights or anything like that.
Carry any weapons?
I
shoot a gun?
Never carry any weapons, no.
So you,
don't
what about this?
People any harm ever?
What about this felony assault charge? What happened with that?
There was a huge amount of protest, fortunately, and including a letter writing campaign by Amnesty International staff in London. The United Nations Human Rights Commission in Geneva, Switzerland, and then many, many other people like Howard Zinn and Ron Kovic and all kinds of activists, of course, all over the world, like organized protests and things like that in support of me. And I ended up settling the case on actually exactly 9 years ago today on in San Francisco, where I'm at Lucy McCabe's office, court. Judge Lucy McCabe, who has very pleasant alcoholic judge that they have there in San Francisco. And in her drunken stupor, she ordered the city to settle the case, and they agreed that if I said I was a felon for having disrupted, actually being technically being thrown on the ground by Andrew Solov, who's a right-wing community activist in San Francisco, during a police commission meeting where I was testifying on behalf of the Civil Rights Committee of the ACLU on the negative human rights effects above the Frank Jordan's Matrix program. So I pled no contest to that attack, and so I had a felony and had a year probation, and that ended the three strikes trial. So
and then after that, you were again charged with felony assault at the Clinton brouhaha.
Then I was charged with felony assault again.
And what happened with that?
I left town. I have no idea. I probably have a warrant or something. I don't know.
Oh ho! Fleeing the jurisdiction, man.
Who knows? I don't recall any court things happening. We might have had the Helen Ann was DA at the time, so it's a good chance that the charges were dropped. I don't recall going to court or anything happening.
You've been to court? How many times did you estimate you've been to court?
Oh wow, hundreds and hundreds of times. I had like over 105. Well, I had 105 arrests in San Francisco, and each arrest involving, you know, who knows how many court appearances. I often, over the, you know, decade of being arrested there, I went to court like several times a week, most weeks, sometimes every day of the week.
Well, apparently this is a practice you were able to break yourself up until recently in Tucson. You began to return to your old bad habits.
Yeah.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, well, then, after having been briefly homeless in Tucson, they ended up having this war type thing going on in Iraq, so I got involved again with the Iraqi Pledge of Resistance here in Tucson, and also, of course, with Funat Bombs. And I was initially, my first arrest was at a Raytheon weapons system during a weapons inspection. Raytheon, here in Tucson, we do make all of the cruise missiles that are used against the people of Belgrade or the people of Afghanistan or Sudan or Iraq. You know, we get the lay claim to being the ones responsible for making the weapons that killed all these people. And so we did a weapons inspection there, which nine of us were arrested for attempting to go into the factory. And then I was arrested again shortly after that at a die-in at Senator McCain's office before the war. And then I was arrested for assault and criminal damage the day the war started. I was convicted of that. I'm currently on probation for that. And then
criminal damage, were you convicted of doing, and what actually happened?
Oh, well, that was an interesting thing. It was about 7:30 at night, and we had been protesting in front of the Federal Building all day. I was sitting at a Funat Bombs table with lentils and apples and literature when five Marines came marching down the street screaming through a bullhorn. One of them screaming through a bullhorn, "You fucking commies, go home. The protest is over. Go home and watch CNN." And they start pushing and shoving the demonstrators. There's about 30 police officers who just sat there and watched this. And then while one of the demonstrators who was hit really violently was arguing with one of the cops, the man with the bullhorn, the Marine with the bullhorn, got behind me and stood above me on the fountain screaming and yelling again. I thought he was going to hit me in the head with the bullhorn because it's only like an inch ledge for him to stand on. And so I got up out of my chair, and he stepped back and fell into the fountain. And his bullhorn didn't work afterwards, so he claimed I pushed him. And I was arrested and charged with assault and criminal damage of his bullhorn. So,
this was a jury trial or a trial before a judge?
Before Judge Crenshaw. And Judge Crenshaw found me guilty.
This is an infraction or a misdemeanor?
Misdemeanor, yeah.
So you didn't want a jury trial?
It was, in this state, for whatever reason, it was, a jury trial wasn't offered. But I actually, usually I would say jury trials are not very useful as a general rule anyway. It just gives the government more excuse to say that a jury of your peers convicted you, and actually they're not juries of our peers. They're just a bunch of, like, you know, to get on a jury, you basically have to have no opinion whatsoever and know nothing about anything. So, you know, that's, I think it's a totally stupid thing to be.
You don't advise activists to seek jury trials?
No, I think it's better to, usually I think judges are, even right-wing judges are more progressive than the general public, you know, in my experience. You know, I had a jury trial in San Francisco, and I couldn't believe how crazy the jurors were.
I
even had a friend that was on the jury, and it still didn't work out. But, yeah, because I think that the judges feel more, they're in the public's eye. They have a little more to lose, whereas a jury, they're just going to be gone again. And plus, you know, I mean, if you ever try to get on a jury, it's like if you've ever, like, read a book or something like that, you have no way you're going to get on a jury. I mean, that's impossible. So, you know, maybe Santa Cruz County could get, like, a person that read a book or had been to another country or something like that on a jury, but not in my experience. The people that I came across in San Francisco were just unbelievably representative of the U.S. Population.
You're referring to the voir dire, where the prosecution and the defense have 12 challenges?
Yeah, and if you've read a book or you saw, like, a newscast on TV or something like that, then you wouldn't be chosen, you know, because that would be way too out there. I mean, it's okay if you watch Oprah Winfrey or something like that, you know. I mean, you might make it on a jury.
I know it's really hard to fight the judge's dictates you must follow, not your conscience, not common sense, but the narrow reading of the law as she or he defines it or describes it in the jury instructions. But I've tended to sympathize with and agree with the fully informed jury association folks that a jury is at least a way of putting a check on things like drug prosecutions. And you can, one juror can say no and hang a jury, but that's hard to do, of course.
Yeah, it is really hard. I mean, in my case, the judge ordered one case in San Francisco, the judge just told the jury that they had to rule against me because the state law said that and there was no choice. And that was that.
Another thing is, juries, of course, are not told the penalties that people face.
Yeah.
So, for instance, in San Francisco, in the medical marijuana case of Ed Rosenthal, the jurors came forward afterward and said they had no idea of the, I don't know, I think it was a number of years sentence that Rosenthal got for, in essence, providing medical marijuana with the approval and, in fact, the express imprimatur of the Oakland city government. But
quite a contrast to Holland, where you could stand at the train station and just sit there smoking a joint and no one would care. And, you know, you can just go to a coffee house and buy really great pot everywhere for really cheap. I mean, it was like only €5 for a gram.
In Santa Cruz, I know that a week ago they were returning significant quantities of marijuana to people that had been confiscated. It was a front-page story under new instructions to the sheriff's office or from the sheriff's office to its deputies around medical marijuana. So slowly, slowly anyway, there seems to be some movement in a more sane direction with enough pressure from the community, although we still have, as I was saying earlier in the show before you came on, medieval medical marijuana laws, even locally, even though you have the so-called state Proposition 215. Locally, you can't have a club open in Santa Cruz because of the outrageous zoning restrictions that council members Rotkin and...
Yeah, see, that kind of thing's stupid, where you could go to these great clubs all over Holland, and it's like, no, you know, and nobody in Holland thinks you're weird, and it's just like a normal thing, and you can just go in and anywhere, like there's stores all over the country.
We're talking to Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, co-founder and bad boy par excellence, who's now roosting in Tucson. Have you been deterred from going to protest? I understand you're having significant health problems, too, that perhaps those who are concerned about your welfare might want to know about.
Oh, yeah. I still go to protests and stuff, and even though I'm being, like, harassed like normal, and I do have fibromyalgia, which is extremely painful, and that caused me to become homeless. And of course, I lost my health insurance and that kind of thing, and lost my ability to work. And then I can't, of course, because this country sucks so bad, you can't get disability. So that's like really screwed. And uh, so uh, that's kind of the, and fibromyalgia is like a really stupid disease, and it's very, very painful, and there's many, many days where I just lay around and can't do anything and don't even know that I'm not doing anything. I just don't even know what is happening because I'm in excruciating pain.
And, people, however, can contribute to food not bombs and to what you're doing when you are able to do things, right?
Yeah, yeah.
How do they do that?
Well, you can check out what we're doing on the web at foodnotbombs.net, and they can also... I'm trying to organize the Richmond Food Not Bombs, actually, is organizing a tour where we will probably be in the Bay Area in May sometime. I don't know the exact dates now. But where we're doing the Drop Bush Not Bombs tour. And it's, you know, I did like 4 months of Europe visiting Food Not Bombs groups there, which was really, really inspirational. And people are like... you know, organizing against capitalism and against the U.S. System, which is being imposed on people all over the world, of course.
Do you have a Food Not Bombs in Haiti, by the way?
We might have one in Haiti. I don't know. Dunifer did a bunch of work with radios down there, so I don't know if we ended up with a Food Not Bombs in Haiti.
You know, there's quite a bit of ferment going on in Haiti.
Yeah, it looks like a U.S. coup in Haiti, which is, that's too bad. But we do have like Food Not Bombs groups in, for instance, Malaysia, Philippines, Japan, Australia, New Zealand. We have them in South Africa, Togo. There's a group starting one in Morocco. There's groups all over Italy, Croatia, you know, Hungary, Czech Republic, Slovakia. Poland has 11 groups, which are really active, really amazing. There's 8 or 9 groups in Finland, 8 or 9 groups in Sweden, Norway. There's groups in Denmark, Belgium, Holland, France, all over England, Ireland, Northern Ireland. Of course, all over Canada, Mexico has many, many chapters. There's many groups in Brazil and Argentina. And there's almost 200 chapters in the United States. It's maybe as many as 500 groups worldwide. It might be a little more or a little less.
And you have the Food Not Bombs book is out in how many languages?
Yeah, the Food Not Bombs book has been published in Spanish, English, and Italian. It sold out of both the Spanish edition. 3,000 copies have been sold of that, and 1,500 Italian copies have been sold. It's being reprinted in Italian at this time. It just has been translated also into Croatian and is going to be published probably this month or next month in Croatian. And it's being translated currently into Polish and they're supposed to be published sometime like in May or June in Polish. And there's people in Turkey that are interested in translating into Turkish. So those are all the languages so far.
You were in the area, I guess, 6 or 8 months ago coming through. After many years of absence from the area, you're returning. What's your analysis of the new the situation at the present time? You're for President Kerry, right? You're a big Democratic Party supporter.
This whole wonderful concept of anybody but Bush is exactly why the whole United States sucks completely at this point, you know, because it's like this kind of stupid politics of that you just try to get rid of Bush, and it doesn't make any difference if the policies of the people running against Bush are any better than Bush at all. And then maybe, you know, like I was impressed when Kerry was a young, whatever he was, and did the Kerry Commission on the Iran-Contra scandal. That was cool. And there was a little bit of talk about CIA's crimes against the people of Latin America. And, there's not necessarily all terrible things about Kerry, but the bottom line is Kerry's not going to stand up against corporate America. And the essential policies of the United States will go on as normal. Of course, you know, we have to face the reality of U.S. politics. Anybody that did have a slightly anti-capitalist perspective, particularly once they got into power, would be just shot and killed on the spot anyway. So it's like, you know, it's you know, clearly this is a country run by the gun, and there's no possibility under the current political system to actually have any kind of change. I mean, that's just not going to happen. It has to be like a change in the system completely. It's just completely hopeless to think that this election is of any significance.
No, wait a minute. You're not advocating the overthrow of the U.S. government by force and violence, are you?
I don't support the Second Amendment to that extent. But the general concept of the Second Amendment I do support, which is the definite overthrow of the government. But the part where you use the guns to overthrow the government, that's so, you know, popular in the Second Amendment, I'm not that behind that. I don't think that would really work too
good.
What's
the anti-war situation like? I should say the resistance to the occupation in Tucson. Is it in here in the West Coast? There is an event coming up, I guess, on March 20th, the anniversary of the war. But people have been pretty chilled out, or distracted, or discouraged. What's happening in Tucson around that?
There's a certain level of there hasn't been too much protest since the occupation started here. And but actually, for you know, the occupation's been going on a year, and I've been 4 months of that, or actually 5 months of that year, 6 months of that year, I've been out of town. So, to me, where I've been, there's lots of resistance against the occupation and lots of protesting. There was I attended a huge demonstration in Paris against it, where hundreds of at least a couple hundred thousand people showed up. I attended an action where we tried to shut down Shannon Air Base in Ireland against the war. That's where the U.S. troops were transported through. And there were protests in Holland and Denmark. There were demonstrations in Italy that I attended against the U.S. occupation. So outside the U.S., there's definitely tons and tons of activity. But I think in March 20th, we have a protest both here in Tucson and one in Phoenix. And I think there will be lots of people out on the streets organizing against the occupation. It's certainly I hate the whole way that the Democrats are not against the war, but assume that all the anti-war activists are going to be for them. And, they back the war as much as anybody else, and they're profiting from the war. And their perspective is just as sick as the Bush administration.
How about Kucinich? What do you think of him?
Well, he probably would have been about the best person to vote for if you were going to vote for somebody, if you were legally allowed to vote in the United States. That would, but it's pretty sick that the Democratic Party's so anti-change and then so pro-war that it was not willing to support Kucinich at all. Mm-hmm. So, it's the Democrats that are responsible for the fact that Kucinich is not, the front runner. They totally backed Kerry because Kerry was pro-capitalist and he voted for the war. So, and he's a great war hero and all that stuff. At least he did come out against the Vietnam War afterwards.
Phu Nha Bom's is of which you're the co-founder. Is how would you compare its influence in the cities it's in and its future now with, let's say, 10 years ago?
Oh, well, one of the things I find really exciting about Phu Nha Bom's is that, particularly in the United States, is in many cities there was no protest movement at all in the smaller cities except for Phu Nha Bom's. And so that actually, Phu Nha Bom's has played a big role and is responsible for activism in the heartland of the United States. That's like really, really significant. And so that's been happening for many years. But during the last 10 years, it seems like it's getting more and more prevalent. There's more and more chapters worldwide and more in the U.S. all the time. I just discovered a Monterey Phu Nha Bom's. They just emailed me from Monterey, California. That's close to where you guys are. They emailed me 3 or 4 days ago saying, hey, we've been down here for like a year serving free food all the time, and you guys never put us on the contact list. Can you do that? I guess they admitted that they had failed to alert me to the fact that they existed.
In Santa Cruz, Food Not Bombs, which I guess they formed a chapter, they started in 1992 formally here.
Uh-huh.
They were very concerned about the civil rights of poor and homeless people. In terms of the, you know, attacks on the rights of the homeless to use public spaces, criminalization of basic life-sustaining behaviors like the right to sleep at night. How is that going in Tucson? Is that a concern of Food Not Bombs there?
Yeah, that's actually the... It's a very similar struggle in Tucson. Because we have, like you have in Santa Cruz, anti-homeless policies, and for similar reasons, because of tourism, and... And there's two downtown business districts which have very aggressive anti-homeless policies. And this police department here actually has this very intense policy where they intentionally beat the crap out of homeless people in front of other homeless people just purely for the purpose of terrorizing them into leaving the areas. And they're not allowed to be in the downtown business areas at all. They're just forbidden to be in these areas.
Now, are you saying that because you've seen police beating up homeless people, received reports, seen documents saying that, okay, here's the beef for today, beat up these people, or...
I haven't seen any documents, but I have seen many times police officers just punching homeless people on the head with their fists and stuff. I mean, it's really sick. And kicking them and everything.
How many times have you seen this?
I think that's maybe 4 or 5 times.
In a period of...
In the last year. And then also I've seen many, many times the Merchants Association people, we call them the Yellow Jackets or the Purple Jackets, the Downtown Business Alliance or the 4th Avenue Merchants Association. Well, they harass me all the time. They harass me for doing Food Not Bombs tables, which is the only two pedestrian areas of the city. They've had me arrested for doing literature tables. They have, you know, the same thing. If you get caught, they yell at me for sitting down. I brought a folding chair, for instance, to sit behind my table while I was in front of the food co-op, and they threatened to arrest me for that, for violating the sitting ordinance.
Sitting in a chair at a table, or?
Yeah, sitting in a chair at a table.
No, they're trying to have me improve your health and your posture. Is that the idea?
Yeah, I don't know. It's really crazy. So I told them, I was going to sue them for violating the Americans with Disability Act. You know, that's ridiculous.
So you are now, in fact, covered by that act?
Probably not. I don't get disability insurance. What?
If you have fibromyalgia, that sounds like a significant disability.
You would think so, but not according to SSI or anything.
Yeah.
That's also I found it so fascinating, the contrast. For instance, when I was in Cancun, I was hanging out with this Food Not Bombs activist who's a doctor in Brazil named Klaus. He was shocked at the stories he heard from young people, younger than me, who were about health care problems in America. Because we have one of the worst health care systems in the world. I mean, definitely... Poland, which is an extremely poor country, has guaranteed health care. I mean, Brazil has guaranteed health care. It's in the Constitution that you have the right to medical care. Here, even if you have health insurance in Tucson, it's 6 weeks before you can see the doctor, even if you have Blue Cross Blue Shield. I mean, it's ridiculous.
How does that compare with times in Brazil or in Poland? Have you gotten any indication of that? I mean, it's
well, I know from experience, when I was in Belfast, which is also a very poor city, I mean, they've been having a war there for years, I guess about 900, I went down to the doctor and made an appointment and they said, yeah, just come back tomorrow, even though I'm not a British citizen, and there's no treaties between the U.S. and Britain about health care. And I went in the next day. I only waited in the waiting room 10 minutes, saw the doctor. He apologized, he was so upset that he would have to charge me money because I was not from Britain or from the EU. And, so I paid exactly the same amount as I pay in Tucson, but instead of waiting weeks, I just went and did it right then. And I got what I needed. It was not a problem, you know. So I just know from experience. And everybody else in Europe gets free medical care. You know, you don't, it's not like you, and you just get to go, and you get to go when you want, and you don't have to wait a huge amount of time, and it's like, you know, it's no problem. It's ridiculous. It's like such a backwards country.
What's on the horizon, you think, in the next few months that people should be aware of and get involved with?
Well, let's see. I would certainly organizing against the occupation is like really, really important, and stepping up pressure on that, making that much more of an issue in the U.S. Also, organizing against the surveillance situation that is occurring in the United States and the whole police state atmosphere that's happening here. Reminding people that the rest of the world is actually like a lot more organized and more free and more advanced than here. That we're living in a total lie about how, you know, the U.S. is so screwed. Like educating people about the stupidity of the Democratic Party, and not with I think that's really important. I think that this every 4 years, this horrible thing where the Democrats just expect you to vote for them because they are not the Republicans. The Democrats have to actually start talking about something and doing something positive. Why vote for the lesser of two evils? It just is completely ridiculous. And that's why, you know, people should be like out there talking about the reason we have George Bush as president now is because of the failure of the Democratic Party, not because of the success of the Republican Party. The Democrats are responsible for the war that we have now in Iraq, because they could have actually run somebody different than you know, somebody that had some contrast to Bush, rather than, you know, we had like Gore, who was totally oil. We all remember when Tipper Gore and Al Gore were throwing, you know, sexually explicit rock music albums into a bonfire, totally reminiscent of Nazi Germany's whole